It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Please to pardon the one-channel audio there with the introduction. It would appear that we've had some feline audio engineering going on. I caught Mushu the cat, or Agnes caught Mushu the cat, walking out of the studio. Trying to look as nonchalant and innocent as possible, and checked it and everything was go, and, well, no, it isn't. In point of fact, I'm down a chance. that cat. But hopefully everything's working, and we'll be okay, and we'll get through the program. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Moran Monday, fittingly enough, on the horn. Yeah, and I, for one, am jumping into the chat room. And there I am, and there you are. If you'd like to be part of the Madcap Multimedia Wacky Zany real-time extravaganza that takes place on this program during the hours in which the program is live, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, well, then just run over to headon.live, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in. You'll be greeted by the likes of Anatole and Foam Cups and Silent R. Lamar and Squeaky and V.T. Blom and many others as they wander in over the course of the evening. And I'm informed by Brother Deacon Asa that we have full bitrate on both platforms, so we are streaming merrily along on both headon.live and whiterosesociety.org. And sometime after the program, I'll figure out what the hell happened to the panning on, because that's just bizarre. That's the right button and everything, and it should be like that, but it's not like that. Oh, dear God. This is just what makes stuff so daggum interesting. It is the 23rd day of April, 2018, or as we reckon it here at the fabulous Kincaid Mansion Horn Studios, the day after Agnes's birthday. We had a fabulous day yesterday. No, not really. It was really quiet. Over the weekend, I did make some more ribs and some more crab salad and some deviled eggs. And my deviled eggs are becoming legendary in the family. But Agnes had a nice birthday, and a week from tomorrow. This is kind of a holiday season. We got kid birthdays in December and January, and February and March. Agnes's birthday is in April. And then a week from tomorrow, we will celebrate our 25th wedding anniversary. How about that? I've been trying to figure out a way to sneak away with her for about a week or so, but so far it's not looking like, that one's not going to get off the launch pad, I don't think. At any rate, it's Moran Monday, the 23rd of April, and here's where we stand. We closed the week last week with a $490 fundraising goal, and that was improved over the weekend to $480, $470. We have a brand new subscriber, Earl. Hi, Earl. Thank you very kindly for jumping in and becoming a subscriber at the Horn. You are much appreciated. Thank you for being part of the effort to keep the Horn on the air. You are now down exactly less than one half of one McDonald's plain hamburger with no cheese per day. But I want to thank you for deciding to be part of keeping the program on the air. Thank you, Earl. Les sending post-dated happy birthday wishes to the Viking warrior Pharaoh princess. Thank you, Les. She will appreciate that. We have subscribers. So here's how it goes. We finished at $490 to go on Friday. Renee took it down to $480. Earl took it down to $470. Jamie took it down to $460. Then today we have the usual $200 to raise because from tomorrow to the end of April is supposed to be fundraising free radio. But we need to raise $660 for that to happen. So that's the fundraising goal for the evening. No big deal, right? $660. If only there were $6 more, it'd probably get people really excited. But no, it's $660 to go. We have subscribers to thank. Thank you, Felicia, formerly of Nebraska, now of, I believe, California. Thank you, Felicia. Thank you, Michael. Thank you very kindly to Bill in Florida. And thank you as well to Kenda out in Missouri. Thank you, Kenda. Thanks as well to the three subscribers we have this morning. That being Stacy in PA. Thank you, Stacy. As well as our old buddy Philip over in Maryland. Thank you, Philip. And it'd be nice to hear from you sometime soon, Philip, if you're feeling up and about and want to jump into the conversation. And thanks to Joyce in Washington, also a subscriber. And finally, but not leastly, thank you to Joan in Talibandiana. And thank you very kindly to David up in Vermont. So that's our subscribers up to and including this evening. Now, the new subscriber challenge. Let's cover that real quick. With the addition of Earl to the list of subscribers, Earl, if other folks will jump in, if we need six more $10 a month subscribers, and Tony and Chico will double that amount. We'll double the first month's subscription amount. So, for instance, the new subscribers, since the challenge was announced, all get their first month subscriptions doubled by Tony and Chico, assuming we get new subscribers, and we need six of them, in order to meet that challenge. And so here we sit, $660 to go to finish fundraising for the month of April, catch up with last week, and take care of tonight. And then we're good to the end of the month. So that's 10 at 66, or 66 people at $10 a piece, or one at 660, or two at 330. Oh, dividing by 4 at 165. I got that far, and I'm not going to go any further than that. And a reminder, I was just thinking of that, Ralphs. If we finish fundraising for the month, that will trigger Ralphs' Trash Fitz Walker stand with an extra $40 into the kitty. So thank you to Ralphs for that. And so if we raise $660, it'll actually turn into $700, courtesy of Ralphs. Thanks, Ralphs. And thank you very kindly indeed. The Trash Fitz Walker stand challenge is in play. So where to go on this Moore End Monday? Well, I was inclined to begin the program with an examination of the outbreak of freedom that took place in Nashville in the Antioch community over the weekend. But I don't know if I should do that now, because there was another outbreak of freedom in Texas, in Tarrant County, at an IKEA store. Fortunately, none but the Freedom Protector are dead out of that. A guy was reported as being slumped over the steering wheel of his black Cadillac, and when someone went for a welfare check, he squeezed off a couple of rounds from a rifle at him. Cops backed away and then returned fire, and we don't know at this point in time if the lawful gun owner turned awful gun owner was killed by his own hand or was killed by police. So we're waiting. And 9 people are dead, 18 are wounded in Toronto, where because they don't have the Second Amendment, they have to resort to killing each other with automobiles. I only mention that because that's almost guaranteed to be the line of, see, cars kill people, and we're not talking about banning cars. You can expect that in 3, 2, 1 from Ted Pantsload Nugent or Wayne the Peter or Dana Lush or Greg Stinkfield or possibly Coleon Noir of the National Rifle Association, America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization. Yeah. Used to be a 24-hour. Now it's like a 2 or 3 hour news cycle. But the shooter in Nashville, who, it should be noted, is not from Nashville, was safely apprehended today because he was a mass murderer, but also white. No word yet on whether the police took him to Burger King or Crystal, or it being Nashville, maybe they took him to Prince's for some fried chicken. No. But the fact of the matter is he was caught. And that's noteworthy, and I'm sure a great sigh of relief has been breathed in the greater Nashville metropolitan area. No, in fact, Travis Reinking was from Illinois. I'm probably going over information that you're well aware of already, but it bears repeating just because when it comes to lawful gun owners, this guy's a real Lulu. Now, I call him a lawful gun owner, although Coleon Noir and Dana Lush et al. Would probably beg to differ with me, because it was pretty clear that Travis Reinking was not mentally well. But we must recall that the NRA has worked tirelessly to make sure that mentally ill people's Second Amendment rights are in full force and effect. Okay? No, they really have. Metropolitan Nashville Police Department tweeted this afternoon, murder suspect Travis Reinking is in custody and arrested moments ago. They caught him in some woods. Now, when he went in to shoot up the Waffle House, he was wearing nothing but a coat and carrying an AR-15 military-style assault rifle. He killed four people before a good guy without a gun took his gun away from him, threw it away, and caused Travis to flee into the woods. He had obtained the weapons lawfully, and here's where it gets bizarre. He's been reported by people near and dear to him as delusional for several years now. At one point in time, he was reporting that Taylor Swift, a pop icon, Taylor Swift, he was reporting that she was stalking him. You know, usually these stories that involve celebrities, especially female ones, they involve somebody stalking the celebrity. No, Travis Reinking was convinced that Taylor Swift was stalking him. Then there was the incident. There was the incident in which he went to a swimming pool and jumped in the swimming pool wearing nothing but his underwear and a ladies' lingerie pink robe, having been admonished to exit the swimming pool. He got out, dropped the robe, and showed everyone his male genitals to prove his maleness. Mm-hmm. Then, summer of 2017, and he got around pretty good. In summer of 2017, he found himself in Washington, D.C., walking up to the Secret Service and, well, not the Secret, but the guards there at the pedestrian entrance of the White House, saying he really needed to see President Trump right then that minute. And they explained to him, no, no, you can't enter the White House this way, son. You got to take the White House tour. And he said, no, I'm going in there. You arrest me if you have to. And he yanked off his necktie. And the Secret Service then arrested him. Well, they spent enough time, the Secret Service did, with young Travis Reinking to figure out that he might have been a bulb or two shy of a chandelier. So when he got home back to Illinois, the FBI dropped by and had a little chat. with Papa Ryan King and his gun rights were revoked by the county in which he lives. This caused the police to go and seize an AR-15 military-style assault rifle and a .22 caliber rifle and a shotgun and a pistol. And this is where things get a little, okay, the whole thing's bizarre. But this is where, this is where farce becomes tragedy. The cops who had taken away the guns then, because freedom and constitutional rights and the guns were lonely, gave the guns to Travis Ryan King's pappy, father, Daddy Ryan King. Daddy Ryan King who, at this point in time, cannot in any wise be said not to know that his son was in the grips of a significant degree of mental unhealth, gave Travis back his freedom protectors. No, really, he did. Gave him back the .22 rifle, gave him back the shotgun, gave him back the pistol, and most importantly, gave him back the military-style AR-15 assault rifle, which he would go on to take to Nashville with him to shoot up a Waffle House. And that is what happened this weekend. One wonders if charges will be filed against Daddy Ryan King. Among other things, when he was finally apprehended, Travis Ryan King had managed to get hold of some pants and another gun. An anonymous civic-minded citizen had provided a tip to the police, and they went to a construction site, and workers said a person had entered the woods there. Investigators followed a pathway and spread out. Then one officer saw a man from the back, and when he turned around, he matched the description of Ryan King. And realizing he was caught, he then laid down on the ground when ordered to and was handcuffed. And yes, when they cut a backpack from his back and looked inside, they found a semi-automatic pistol. During the melee itself, we're talking about 3:25 a.m. on Sunday. James Shaw had been out club hopping, and in areas where there are Waffle Houses, well, what you do when you've been out clubbing and it's 3 o'clock and 3:15 in the morning and everything's shut down, you suddenly realize, hey, I'm hungry. Let's go to Waffle House. Scattered, smothered, and covered, y'all. That's how they describe their hash browns. They scatter them out on the griddle. They smother them in onions. And then they cover them in cheese. Scattered, smothered, and covered. There are other words that are used to describe if you want them to add some ham chunks or some bits of chopped bell pepper or jalapeno, that sort of thing. But James Shaw went to the restroom, and when he came back out, the Travis Reinking was shooting. And he waited until there was a pause in the shooting, at which point the young man was the killer, was trying to reload, put another magazine in the weapon. And James Shaw, seeing his opportunity, took it, grabbed the weapon from him, threw it behind the counter, and then tried to get out the door. Have I mentioned that Travis Reinking, once again, was wearing nothing but a green jacket? Didn't even have on the underwear that he had on under the pink robe previously. Well, by the time James Shaw was able to perform the heroic act that he performed, he wound up getting grazed along the elbow. There were already people dead. Three died on the scene. One died in the hospital. He drove there in his gold-colored Chevy Silverado pickup truck. One wonders where he got something like that. Then he sat there in front of the parking lot for what is described as about 4 minutes before he opened fire. He killed Torian Sanderlin, 29, of Goodlettsville. Joe Perez, 20, of Nashville. Sanderlin worked at the Waffle House. Those folks he shot in the parking lot. Inside the restaurant, he shot De'Ebony Groves, 21-year-old student at Belmont University. Aquila Da Silva, a 23-year-old from Antioch, a rap artist and music video producer. He was accompanied by his 21-year-old girlfriend, T.O. Wagner. At present, the effort is underway to save her leg because she was shot. Sherita Henderson of Antioch was shot, treated at Vanderbilt University Hospital. It is hard not to notice that this guy, this killer from Illinois, selected as his target a Waffle House that just happened to have predominantly black folks in it, people of color. Not a lot of mention in that in the coverage. But it is factual. The man who saved more people from being killed, James Shaw, has set up a crowdfunding campaign, not for himself, but for the victims, because it is, again, worth noting in this country that we don't take care of the victims of mass murder. They are, conscious or unconscious, whether they realize it or not, on the hook for all of their medical care. Waffle House is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I don't know. I don't think they ever close. Maybe they'll be sued for not having had bulletproof glass. But he shot people inside the restaurant, too. That seems kind of ridiculous, doesn't it? Maybe they need bulletproof counters, too. But the fact of the matter is, there are people who are being treated for their injuries. Who may or may not be able to pay for them. Silent R. Lamar says, what's new on the menu at your local Waffle House? Pancake breakfast with bacon and AR-15 bullets. And for an additional fee, one bulletproof vest with helmet. We don't have Waffle Houses around here, but, you know, they're a Huddle House, Omelet Shop. They all operate on the same 24/7 principle. And for just greasy spoon diner food, it's really pretty decent. And you get to sit there and watch the person cook your meal for you so you know it's fresh and it's, you know, it's not frozen. Good eats. And that's what makes it such a wonderful place to go when you've been out running around and having a good time. It's among other things, it's a good place to sober up a little bit. A little bit of irony. There had been another shooting in Antioch at a church not too long back, Antioch, Tennessee. And irony upon irony, back when he was still with us, the prophet, Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, opened one of his bits by talking about after a show being in a Waffle House in the Nashville area, and there are many, when he was by himself and reading a book and approached by the waitress who asked him, what you reading for? Bill Hicks remarking, I'd been asked before what I was reading, but never why. What you reading for? The Silent R. Lamar reminds me, that Waffle House had the forgotten Americans Trump talks about. Terrace with a note says, shoot out at the OK Waffle House. Maybe not so OK anymore. Ron in Raleigh noting, hell, Bob. If they'd said something about the race of the victims, people might have jumped to the conclusion that this fellow was a white nationalist or something. Well, he did tell when he was detained at the White House last summer. He did explain the fact that he had a right to inspect the grounds of the White House because he was a sovereign citizen. I didn't know this. Ron and Raleigh also pointing out they found a stalker asleep in Taylor Swift's residence this weekend. She has a lot of interesting fans. P.S. He was, however, wearing pants. But this is America. And this particular case highlights the essential problem that we face in the vision of America that the National Rifle Association would like us to have. all over this country, there are what are referred to as open carry laws. And those open carry laws make it possible for citizens, good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals, to sling a fully loaded military-style assault rifle over their shoulders and walk into any place of business they choose. Be it a Waffle House or Walmart or at most anywhere. And until the moment when the lawful gun owner opens fire, you don't know if that's a good guy with a gun or a bad guy with a gun. In Antioch, turned out he was a bad guy with a gun. But the NRA doesn't want you to even be able to ascertain that before the hot lead has started to fly. Because if he had just walked into that Waffle House that was at that point in time being visited primarily by people of color, the National Rifle Association would tell them that their appropriate response was to act as if nothing was out of the ordinary, because it's completely okay for white guys to walk around with AR-15s slung over their shoulder. You know, until he proves that he hasn't any business with the AR-15, which he will prove by killing a bunch of people. Conversely, if a young black man with an AR-15 slung over his shoulder was to walk into a Waffle House patronized primarily by white folks at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can bet that there would probably be any number of local police cars on the scene pretty fast. Because open carry is one of the single most racially tinged phenomena in this country. I mean, hell, a couple of guys in Philly didn't even have a slingshot or an assegai, or the one guy had was a full bladder, and that was enough to get 911 called. Remember, in Philly, the person in charge there at the Starbucks called 911, which is reserved for what? That's right, emergency situations, life and limb, that sort of thing. And a black guy wanting to use the restroom in Philly was an emergency situation. So, what is the appropriate response to white guys walking around with AR-15s. Do you tackle first and ask questions later? Do you disarm him, call the police, and make sure that his intentions are peaceable? Or, as the NRA would prefer, do you wait until he's killed a few people before you reach the conclusion that the lawful gun owner has become an awful gun owner and something needs to be done? It's a quandary. Because the only answer that makes any sense in all of this is that we don't let people, black or white, walk around with AR-15s or shotguns or anything else slung over their shoulders when they go up to the Wiggling Pig for a gallon of milk and a loaf of bread, because it'll probably snow tonight or something, because we don't have spring here. And yet that is treated as a heresy by the National Rifle Association. But it's the only thing that makes any sense. Don't carry these things around. And this couldn't be any more textbook than it is. So the question becomes one of how you get to where we need to be. Lee in New York. Good guy with a gun. To the NRA, every gun owner is a good guy with a gun. If there's a problem with the gun usage, it is law enforcement's failure. That's the absolute truth. In the eyes of the NRA, if you own a firearm, you are a better sort of American than those of us who prefer not to own them because we recognize the inherent dangers. We recognize the fact that gun owners are more likely to suffer firearm injuries and deaths, that deaths by suicide go up dramatically in homes where people own guns. But we're inferior citizens. The real Americans, according to the NRA, are gun owners. And the realest of the real Americans are the gun owners who walk around with military-style assault weapons slung across their back or over their shoulder. Silent R. Lamar trying to break it down for us is... I'd like to suggest three sections. Good guy with a gun, first. Second, bad guy with a gun. Third, crazy person with a gun. Note, the bad guys with a gun generally commit a crime, rob a bank, store, or so forth. But not to say that that's a bad idea, Silent R. Lamar, but there's no way on the spot to tell the difference between a bad guy with a gun and an unhinged person with a gun. And I do not mean any of these remarks to seem ableist. That's not my intention. But it is, well, no, it's not obvious. You know what? It could be that Travis Reinking was motivated not by his madness, but by racism. Because that sovereign citizen bullshit goes hand in hand with various varieties of racism in this country. Racism that has been deliberately stoked within the body politic. And it's not, I mean, so what is that? That's two, three gun stories? What? Well, out of Ohio, we also had the story from 3 days ago, Friday. It was about 11 o'clock on April the 20th. At a hotel on Euclid Avenue, the greater Cleveland area, in Wycliffe, I don't know. Mama, who was a lawful gun owner and had a permit to carry her Freedom Protector all concealed like. Well, like I said, they were in a hotel. It was about 11 o'clock. And Mama was handling her Freedom Protector when, as they say in the news accounts, the gun just went off. Or the gun accidentally went off. And when the gun accidentally went off while being handled by the lawful gun owner, well, by the time the loud bang had finally dissipated, and the muzzle smoke had cleared, lawful gun owning mommy had shot her 2-year-old baby in the chest. Beat cops and paramedics and detectives all showed up at the hotel. The patrol officer, the first one to show up, began CPR on the 2-year-old, as opposed to, say, young African-American man in Sacramento whom they shot for having a cell phone and then did not perform any life-saving functions for. Or, say, Tamir Rice, on whom they didn't do much in the way of life-saving measures for a very long time. No, it was clear Mommy had a tragic accident and slaughtered her 2-year-old toddler. And the baby was declared dead at Lake West Hospital a little bit later. Mama, who just had the tragic accident with her Freedom Protector, has not been charged with anything, but an investigation is continuing. The Wycliffe Police Department announcing, upon completion of a full investigation, the matter will be reviewed to determine what, if any, criminal charges should be filed. The Lake County Crime Lab and Prosecutor's Office assisted on scene during the investigation. We are not releasing any names at this time, as extended family is still being notified. This is truly a tragic situation. Please keep this beautiful young child and her family in your, anybody? Thoughts and prayers, yes, thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers. Now, while there may have been some question as to whether Travis Reinking was a lawful gun owner, there is no question whatsoever that mommy in the hotel on Euclid Avenue was a lawful gun owner. I mean, she was permitted up. That meant she'd been to the shooting class and the gun handling class and knew exactly how to handle her weapon. And somehow or another, still, she managed to kill her baby. Now, this is going to be a challenge. This would be a challenge for your average birth or death or ninth or tenth or bircher, bagger, booger eater, trumpansie, maggot. Because remember, they love them. Well, the baby was not a fetus, so maybe not so much. But they love them some little babies. But they love them some guns even more. And if mama had gone to a licensed, legal women's reproductive health care clinic a couple of years back and had an abortion, well, all those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Christians would be up in arms. Whoo, mercy! Hollering, whoo, she done murdered her baby inside her. She's a baby killer. Here, it's a tragic accident. And you can't blame the poor gun for what it did when it just went off, when it accidentally fired. If it fired with no agency by the mother, then it really is the gun's fault, isn't it? Which indirectly returns us to the question of Travis Reinking and the four weapons that were taken away from him. You know, the police showed up at the house and took away his guns. And then the police came back and gave him to his daddy and said,
just make sure, we understand these are perfectly innocent. Innocent firearms. These firearms mean no harm. They're just designed for the purpose of slaughtering other human beings. But left to their own devices, they won't do any harm. I mean, we've all seen NRA TV, haven't we, sir? Yes, absolutely. So we're bringing you these guns back, sir, so that they can have a good forever home. But you'll take care of these poor guns. Won't you, sir?
Yes, I will.
How in the hell does that happen? How is it that after your gun rights have been extinguished, the cops have to give the guns back? Well, because that's one of those things that maybe we didn't pay so much attention to along the way, with the NRA shoving stand your ground and open carry and cross-state line reciprocity and everybody got to have a gun. As I've mentioned before, there are a lot of laws out there that speak to what law enforcement has to do with a firearm. And one of the things that they often have to do is give them back. And see, it's very possible. I don't know about Illinois, but it's very possible that had they kept them, they wouldn't even have been able to destroy them. They would have had to put them back into the stream of commerce. Here's a horror for you. Unless the Tennessee legislature has acted correctively, and seeing as how we're talking about the Tennessee legislature, the odds of that are something approaching nil. Once Travis Reinking's legal process is completed, once he's either pled guilty or been found guilty or not guilty by reason of insanity or any of the other, anything other than a direct acquittal, the AR-15 that he used to slaughter four people in Antioch, Tennessee, will become property of the state of Tennessee in the care, custody, and control of the Metro Nashville Police Department. And by operation of statute, the Metro Nashville Police Department will probably have to sell that AR-15 at auction. And make it possible for some other individual to purchase it and shoot up a Little League diamond, some Little League kids playing baseball or a soccer practice or a McDonald's or a Walmart or an IKEA or a Costco or a church. Because the NRA has been so thorough that there is a cult, not just around gun ownership, but around guns themselves, so that we dare not take a gun out of circulation that's already killed people. Now, if a dog bites a human being, that dog may very well be apprehended and killed for simply having bitten a human. Siegfried and Roy, that one tiger that was not trying to hurt either Siegfried or Roy, I don't remember which one, that tiger was killed. In some states, when a human being kills, we kill that human being. But the instrument the human being used for the killing, if it's a gun, well, in some states, it becomes a subject of capitalism again. Alabama broke a record this past week. They executed the oldest guy ever to be executed in the United States, 83 years old. He was a murderer. Murdered two people, one of them a federal judge. And at 83... they were not going to let him die in his sleep down in Alabama. Got to wonder what happened to the gun he used. Or maybe he was a bomber. I don't know. But you can only hope you can only hope that there is some sort of change in the offing via the efforts of young people in this country But this is a diverse country, and to pin all of your hopes on young people is probably mistaken. And we're up against a whole lot of money. So that's just a starting place for the weekend. Or from the weekend, rather, for this Moran Monday. There's a lot more stuff to go into. And, well, we'll also see which direction you want to take the program in, if you care to engage in some conversation. You know the number, 304-574-8178, or 844-843-4676. That's 844-THE-HORN, toll-free. And Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Lee, little cowbell for Lee. If a dog ever bites Wayne the Peter, the dog should be forgiven. It has suffered enough. Yep. Oh, one last thing before the break. Precious little snowflakes of the Rifle Association are in mid-hissy right now. No, not over people of color who got slaughtered with an assault rifle in Antioch, Tennessee. No, come on, please. No, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-to-mentalist, amosexuals are right pissed off at a company called Yeti. For a number of years, Yeti makes some apparently darn fine coolers, and they're expensive ones too. They tend to run between $250 and $350 bucks. Hunters are said to be fond of them because they'll keep things cold and/or preserved for extended periods of time with no electricity involved. Well, over the weekend. Without any prompting, Yeti ended its relationship with the National Rifle Association. And the NRA members lost their minds. And what did they do? They went out to shoot a Yeti. No, really, they did. They shot their Yeti cooler. They shot a thing with their Freedom Protector to symbolically protest the dissolution of the relationship between Yeti and the NRA. In one instance, some good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-to-mentalist, amosexuals put some tannerite. You may recall we've talked about tannerite in the past. Tannerite is an explosive that is perfectly legal to own and purchase, and it makes a really big explosion when you shoot it. So they strapped some one ammo sexual strapped some Tannerite to a Yeti cooler, and well, here we go. Show that Yeti cooler. It's in a million tiny pieces now, having been shot by a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual member of the National Rifle Association. I guess that's a message to the corporate governance board of Yeti, telling them that they're next. I mean, what other message is there? You're willing to you're so goddamn dumb. You're willing to assassinate your own $350 cooler to show the CEO of Yeti Corporation that you mean business. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the video comes from NRA TV with the hashtag #SupportTheNRA. Here's another pissed off ammo sexual. Yeti makes insulated cups too. It'll keep drinks cold for a good long while.
Hey Joe, here with Aegis Tactical. Listen, I made a comment earlier today about Yeti. Basically, all the deal with them, they pull out of the back of anything with the NRA. They lost their main card. Basically, is what happened. And I made a comment saying I don't own a Yeti product.
Yeah, you got that. They lost their man card. Yeah, Yeti is, these are Yeti vaginas now because they ain't got no man card because they ain't giving deals to the precious little snowflakes of the NRA. Now, wait a minute. Bubba here says he ain't got no Yeti product. Wait a minute.
Card basically is what happened. And I made a comment saying I don't own a Yeti product and that this would stop me from ever purchasing a Yeti product in the future, which it will. However, I misspoke because 2 years ago I bought a you know what ton of Leopold optics and I still love Leopold.
Because they ain't stopped doing business with the NRA. Leopold. Actually, it's Leupold. L-E-U, not L-E-O, you goddamn Cletus, but never mind.
But when I bought all that, they sent me this Yeti coffee mug, which I honestly, folks, is pretty cool. Well, actually hot. We're cool. Depends on what you put in there. And I
yeah, it works, but I'm going to kill it.
My coffee hot, so it keeps it hot. I have my Pelican ones, too, and I like them a little bit better. And I like them a lot better now. So this is what I think of Yeti. Give me a second while I load up. So, that's what I think of Yeti. Give me a minute. I'll do this more. It's fine. Well, nothing against our friends over at Leopold. Hopefully they do not purchase Yeti products in the future.
He says, holding up the bullet-riddled corpse of his Yeti coffee mug, let's hope Leopold don't do no business with Yeti no more. It's a nice optical manufacturing plant you got there. Be a shame if something happened to it. No, really.
I definitely will not be using this cup anymore. Anyway, don't look that complicated to make. I'm sure you can get the off-brand ones. Do the same thing. I'm going to keep local, get the Terbis tumblers. And listen, speaking of keeping local, these are the LPA new sights for your Glock. Yes, I'm going to put a shameless plug in there real quick, but they are adjustable sights for your Glock. Things are pretty cool. And yes, that's a GoPro mount. That's how we got the video there. And we had a technical difficulty and the mount went flying off.
No, really. He put a GoPro on his Freedom Protector to take the picture, the footage of him shooting the cup. Boy, don't you know he wishes that was the CEO of the Yeti Corporation instead of just a stainless steel cup? See, there again we have the problem. One minute they're shooting inanimate objects, and the next thing they're shooting somebody at a Waffle House. I wish I was kidding. Well, yeah, see, that's why the complicated explanation there hung like Jesus. Don't they have to first buy the product before they can kill it? Well, see, the complicated excuse that Cletus here makes is that he didn't realize he had some Yeti. He didn't think he had any Yeti, but he didn't realize he had some, but he actually got some in a giveaway from the Leopold Company. Leopold. And it was up there, so he figured it was time for it to die. Yeah. And some folks didn't necessarily want to be shooting up the kitchen or anything, and they didn't have their own personal indoor gun range or a whole bunch of Tannerite. So in a fit of pique, they hack at it with a knife. You think I'm kidding, don't you?
Yeti doesn't back the NRA, or does it have anything to do with the NRA? Well, Yeti no longer exists to me.
And so he takes a knife, and then he realizes it ain't going to take a knife to get the sticker off of it. And then he gets a Sharpie for freedom, and he writes NRA on his Yeti cooler. That'll show him. And another feller, he had him a Yeti hat, and he didn't want it's perfectly good hat. It's in your camo pattern there. So, you know, you never know when you're going to need that out in the woods. You know, when you're stalking Bambi. So instead, well, the hat got the knife.
So what do you think of Yeti?
I got your
cutting your logo off of his hat.
I don't have any empty drums though.
Fine Arctic.
That one's titled Yeti Coolers, You're Dead to Us. I know. What makes it more frightening is that these people who are taking out their angst on coolers and clothing have a shitload of guns and apparently have a real hard time restraining themselves from using them. Lee asks, do you think it was a business ploy by Yeti? Have them destroy the product today, have them buy a replacement next week? Oh, that would be deliciously capitalist, wouldn't it? Well, I said I didn't want no more Yetis, but them damn Coleman coolers, they just don't cut the mustard. These things are space age. I mean, how am I ever going after I've dismembered Granny? How am I ever going to keep her cool long enough to dispose of the body? I mean, it Jesus. Ron in Raleigh asks, "What is wrong with these people? These people have mental problems. There should be a name for this pathology." Ron, there is. It's called National Rifle Association Membership Syndrome. Marty says, meanwhile, too bad I bought a Rock Mountain tumbler first, another of the keep hot drinks hot for 12 hours, keep cold drinks cold for 24. Not that I've tried. Well, but you're not an NRA member, so you wouldn't even so you wouldn't have to kill it or anything. This ain't the same Yeti as the grill manufacturer, is it? Because I am pretty sure those guys are lockstep trumpansies. I don't know. You'll have to take you'll have to put on your Horn Research Department hat to find that out, Brother Deacon Asa. We'll be expecting a full report back. So 15 minutes past the hour, $660 to raise this evening to finish fundraising and have fundraising-free radio all this week. And, you know, just knocking down the 200 that we try to raise on any given evening would be great. Remember, the Trash Fitz Walker Stand Challenge is on the table, courtesy of Ralph's. If we knock down the 660, she turns it into 700. And, you know, I'll cross my fingers. But so far, yeah, we're at a big fat zero. So let's take a break and see what y'all want to talk about, if and you want to talk at all. And we'll go from there. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Be right back.
Pardon me for interrupting, but there's something I must explain. You see, the songs that you've just heard were all on single records. And sometime between Queen of the Hop and Dream Lover, I went in to record my first album. It was called That's All. And one of the things in the album was a song that changed my entire life. I'm not going to tell you which song it was, but I'll be singing it for as long as I live. So if you'll sharpen up your fingers, we'll begin.
Oh, the shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bite with its teeth, babe, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears old Maggie Heath, babe, so there's never, never a trace of red. Now on the sidewalk, ooh, Sunday morning, lies a body just oozing life. Eek! And someone sneaking round the corner. Could that someone be Mac the Knife? There's a tugboat down by the river, don't you know, where a cement bag just drooping on down. Oh, that cement is just, it's there for the weight, dear. Five will get you 10, old Mackie's back in town. Not you hear about Louis Miller, he disappeared, babe, after drawing out all his hard-earned cash. And now Maggie spins just like a sailor. Could it be our boy's done something rash? Nah, Jenny Diver. Ho, ho. Yes, Sugi Tawdry. Ooh, Miss Lottie Lenya. And old Lucy Brown. Oh, the line forms on the right, babe. Now that Maggie's back in town. Jenny Diver, Rose Suki Tawdry, look out to Miss Lottie Lenya and old Lucy Brown. Yes, that line forms on the right, babe. Not that Maggie's back in town.
Nineteen minutes past the hour, a little interlude there just to sort of reset the mood and the attitude for the program as we continue into the rest of the evening. That's Mac the Knife. Hung Like Jesus wanted to know, is that Max the Knife or Jack the Knife? It's actually Mac the Knife. You were half right on both counts. Okay, it's a different Yeti brand than the Yeti smoker. Good smokers, those son of a guns. Yeah. Hey, breaking news, George H.W. Bush is in intensive care. Press statement earlier today. President Bush was admitted to the Houston Methodist Hospital yesterday morning after contracting an infection that spread to his blood. He is responding to treatments and appears to be recovering. We will issue additional updates as events warrant. As far as breaking news is concerned, though, far more significant is the fact that they held the vote today in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on the nomination of bigot and maniac Mike Pompeo, first in his class at West Point. It was going to be a tie, if not an outright loss. And Rand Paul, man of titanium spine, who said, by God, he would not vote in favor of that Mike Pompeo, because Mike Pompeo, yada, yada, yada. And it was all over the Iraq War. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, flipped his vote to yes, so that strictly along party lines, Mike Pompeo could escape the Senate Foreign Relations Committee with a recommendation that he be confirmed by the full Senate as the new Secretary of State of the United States. The whole matter centered on the fact that at some point in the past, Geezer Disgustus said that he was opposed to our attack on the innocent people of Iraq that cost in excess of 1 million innocent Iraqi non-combatant lives. Trump had also said that he supported it. You know, that's the thing about the Tangerine Tiberius. He can be on both sides of an issue at the same time, because cognitive dissonance is not possible among the maggots, because they have no cognitive ability in the first place. I'm so old that I remember back when another individual was accused of being for the Iraq War before he was against it. Of course, that was John Kerry, and that summer of 2004, Republicans went to their convention and mocked John Kerry's military service by wearing Band-Aids on their cheeks with little purple hearts drawn on them. Do you remember that? I remember that. Well, Mike Pompeo had not said that Iraq was a mistake. And so earlier today at 5 p.m., Rand Paul, man of integrity, tweeted, after calling continuously for weeks for Director Pompeo to support President Trump's belief that the Iraq War was a mistake, and that it is time to leave Afghanistan today, I received confirmation that Director Pompeo agrees with at real Donald Trump, making sure to at the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini in the tweet. Over the weekend, Trump had contacted Rand Paul. To tell him how desperately he wanted Mike Pompeo to be Secretary of State, because well, what we really need in the Secretary of State is a religious bigot and warmongering maniac. Rand Paul and that thing on his head continued tweeting, saying, President Trump believes that Iraq was a mistake, that regime change has destabilized the region, and that we must end our involvement with Afghanistan. Having received assurances from President Trump and Director Pompeo that he agrees with the president on these important issues, I've decided to support his nomination to be our next Secretary of State. So now it'll go to the floor. Where, having folded like a cheap suit, Rand Paul will remain folded like a cheap suit because he's Rand Paul and has all the scruples of amoebic dysentery. Jesus. No, really. Rand Paul believed something that Donald Trump told him. Oh, that, yeah, that's a real, wait, where's my knee? Wait a minute, gotta slap it. Oh, that's a real knee slapper there. That's what that is. He believes something Donald Trump told him. Yeah, I mean, I'm one of those peace people. I could easily say, hey, yeah, that's cool, that's great. Let's acknowledge that George W. Bush opened up a Pandora's bottle that just is still pouring toxin and madness and evil into the world. Sure. I mean, I'm one of those people, and you probably are too, who was right about the Iraq War all along, that it was a terrible thing to do. A giant, stinking, horrible, bloodthirsty mistake. I know, the same question occurs to me, unlike Jesus. The hell is Trump holding over these people's heads? I don't know. Maybe he told Rand Paul he'd get his next-door neighbor to stomp the shit out of him some more. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, is not known for his determined stances. He can be turned like a little red wagon. Well, not red, but I think it's absolutely hilarious that there's any kind of a debate inside the Republican Party on the rightness or wrongness of the Iraq War. Rand Paul couldn't be bothered to object to the nomination of Mike Pompeo because of the probably countless number of times that Mike Pompeo has talked about how evil the Muslims are and about how his Christian faith means that he's got a certain worldview. And Rand Paul, who, remember, he's got some libertarian bona fides there, and that means that when you're a libertarian, you're supposed to respect people's rights, and everybody's supposed to have rights and be able to do what the hell they want to do as long as they're not violating the law and stuff, and government doesn't need to be in the bedroom. It just needs to be in a woman's innards, all of that. Right? So Rand Paul couldn't find a principle on which to vote against a guy who, even as he sits in the office of the Secretary of State, will do so presiding over a department that has probably no small number of guys who are married to other guys, women who are married to other women, and will at the same time think that they are abominations unto the nostrils of his almighty, invisible friend in the sky from the Bronze Age with the long gray beard, who smites people and probably Probably going to smite some gay people if he hears Mike Pompeo's prayer. Dear Jesus, please protect the little fetuses and accept the ones that might grow up to be homos. And you can smite them in the womb if you want to, Lord Jesus. I was first in my class at West Point. West Point, Mississippi. So he'll probably go on to be the Secretary of State now. Thanks, Rand. Thanks for those libertarian principles by which you stand so convincingly. Albert from Rhode Island says, Bob, do you think Rand Paul's GOP comrades will crucify him for flip-flopping? Nah, Albert, hell no. I-O-K-I-Y-A-R, it's okay if you're a Republican. You can flip, you can flop and then flip and flip some more, and you can do a triple sow cow with a double whammy somersault and land on the pointy parts of your skate for a perfect 2-point landing, and your fellow Republicans won't say squat about it. Subject line, Rand Paul, true believer. This in from Scott and Punky. A lot of people foolishly and willingly believed Trump. Stupidity loves company. As for what Trump might be holding over Rand Paul for anyone else or anyone else, it's all about the money and the power and keeping both. Now, speaking of Trump lying, the folks over at Bloomberg got hold of flight records for Carotene Caligula back before he was president. Their flight records for 2013. In 2013, Trump was still running the Miss Universe pageant. And at one point in time, not once but twice, Donald Trump told James Comey, who was at the time the director of the FBI, and thus someone whom you could not lie to as a matter of law, I never spent the night in Moscow back in 2013 when I was running the Miss Universe pageants. I never spent a night, not a night, never a night. Not one beautiful night, believe me. Oops. Now remember, this is the same time period in which the pee-pee incident from the Steele dossier is alleged to have taken place. Not having spent the night in Moscow is one of the reasons that Trump claimed that the pee-pee incident couldn't possibly be real. But Bloomberg has gotten hold of the flight records. The aviation data company FlightAware sold Bloomberg the records, in which we find out that that Jesus H. Trump took off from Asheville, North Carolina. He'd been there at a birthday celebration for... Who else? I mean, the irony. Now dead Billy Graham. That was November the 7th, 2013. They further found out that the jet in question is owned by a business partner of the Nectarine Neros, a guy by the name of Phil Ruffin. And the jet touched down at the Vnukovo Airport in Moscow in the early morning hours of Friday, November the 8th. So, left the ring-kissing ceremony for Billy Graham, November 7th, arrived early morning, November 8th, Here's the fun part. The plane did not leave Moscow until Sunday, November 10th. 3:58 a.m. Moscow time, Sunday, November 10th. The plane left Moscow, landed at Newark Liberty International Airport at 4:11 a.m. Eastern time on the 10th of November. Oops. So, in fact, and I think it's probably a safe bet that Geezer Disgustus did not spend the night in the plane. He lied. He lied to Comey, not once, but twice, when Comey was FBI director. And he did spend the night in Moscow. And being Trump, he'd want to spend the night in as hoity-toity a room as he could get. And there's nothing more hoity-ski-toity-ski in Moscow than the presidential suite of the Ritz-Carlton, which, of course, is where the Golden Showers event took place. Friday night, according to the tweeting that went on, Friday night he went to a birthday party, stayed at the Ritz Moscow, attended Miss Universe Saturday, and then went to an after party that started at 1 a.m. Sunday morning, the 10th of November, 2013. Stayed at the Ritz Moscow. You know, where the peeing took place. Nope, he didn't. Marty says, what? He didn't use his own bird? Geez, talk about stiffing your crew out of flight hours. I thought you said you had a Hemi. It's in the shop. I would have flown my own plane, but it's in the shop. Or maybe he thought there was less likelihood of being tracked that way. Mm-hmm. Steve in New York notes, funny, that dossier is looking more and more like it's 100% truthful. I'm kind of funny about that word truth, Steve. It looks to me like it's 100, more and more like it's 100% factual. Factual. So maybe there's something else you wonder if Bob Mueller might actually find out, hear about that? Because, see, Donald Trump lies just to be lying. He'll tell one lie one minute and another lie the next, and then you get caught in the snares of sorting out which lie is nearer the truth. All of which reminds us of the important work being done by Attorney General Eric Schneiderman up in New York, because he's been lobbying the legislature of New York to make a change to state law. Giving a statement, Schneiderman said, "We are disturbed by reports that the president is considering pardons of individuals who may have committed serious federal financial tax and other crimes, acts that may also violate New York law. We must ensure that if the president or any president issues such pardons, we can use the full force of New York's laws to bring such individuals to justice." And in point of fact, Eric Schneiderman sent a letter to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and to the leaders of the New York State Legislature complete with footnotes and circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each page. He explained it on Twitter, saying, "Long ago, the Supreme Court made clear that presidents cannot pardon for state crimes. Now it's time for New York law to do the same. No one accused of breaking New York's laws should escape accountability merely because of a strategically timed presidential pardon. We are disturbed by reports that POTUS is considering pardons of individuals who may have committed serious federal crimes, acts that also may violate New York law. We must ensure that if any president issues such pardons, we can use New York's laws to bring such individuals to justice," and provided photographs of the letter that he sent. Now, that doesn't just take in Michael Cohen. That takes in Donald Trump. It takes in probably Paul Manafort. Takes in the Mooch. Takes in Jared. And Ivanka. Oh, yeah. Busy, busy, busy. Other things? Arizona teachers have voted to go on strike. They want a 20% raise in addition to implementing a permanent salary structure. They want competitive pay for educational support staff. They want no new tax cuts until the state's per pupil funding reaches the national average and restoration of education funding to 2008 levels. Doug Ducey, who is the governor of Arizona, ran to the Twitters and said, "No one wants to see teachers," he's a Republican, "no one wants to see teachers strike. If schools shut down, our kids are the ones who lose out. We've worked side by side with the education community to develop a sustainable plan to give teachers a 20% raise by 2020. 20% by 2020. It's downright catchy, isn't it? The only problem is it doesn't pay bills in 2018. So there are supposed to be actions today, tomorrow, and Wednesday. The same thing, or something similar, is taking place in Colorado. And by God, this time the Republicans say it's something up with which they will not put. Colorado teachers have said they're going to strike. They've been rallying lately at the state capitol. They want more funding for their schools. They want more funding for their students. And yes, they'd actually like to be paid a living wage. They've called a walkout in Colorado for April the 27th. The Denver School District, as well as several others, have already announced that they're going to go ahead and close that day. You know, we think about Colorado and all the revenue they brought in from legalized cannabis and whatnot, and it's kind of shocking when you find out that teachers in Colorado are among the lowest paid in the country. Colorado is 46th in average teacher pay. That number coming from the National Education Association. Colorado is $2,500 less per student per year than the national average. So how do the Republicans respond? How does the GOP address the shameful failure to fund education, public education in Colorado? By saying that Colorado maybe should not just aim for matching the national average for spending per student, but should seek to exceed it and become a shining educational gem in America's heartland? No, they're Republicans. What are you thinking? Instead, no, a pair of Republican legislators have introduced a bill in the Colorado Senate. They introduced it on Friday, and it calls for teachers, you know, that they don't want out of the classroom because they want them teaching the children. It calls for any teachers who go on strike to be put in jail for up to 6 months. Maybe we can put the little tykes in there with them so that they can just teach for fucking free while they're imprisoned. And being as how they're imprisoned, there won't be any 13th Amendment involuntary servitude problems. But that's not enough. Remember, they're 46th in teacher pay. And so consequently, the Republicans want to hit them where it hurts. You know, the wallet. Their bill would call for teachers who go out on strike to not just be put in the hooscow, but fined $500 a day if they violate a court order to end their strike. The two God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding, Christ-centered Republicans who want this to happen, who introduced this legislation, are Senator Bob Gardner and Representative Paul Lundeen. The legislation would even go so far as to strip teachers of any due process rights that they have and make it legal to fire them without any sort of administrative hearing. Jesus. They really do show their hands. They really do let you know what they think of people who work for a living, these Republicans. I mean, that combination is pretty astonishing. Not only taking away due process rights, no hearing after being summarily fired, but then putting people in jail and fining them $500 a day. I suspect that that is not going to intimidate the teachers in Colorado. If they're not intimidated by being as poorly paid as they are, they're not going to be intimidated by that. When I read that story, I was reminded of, and we can file it. Well, file it under that old saying, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. A lot of people think Gandhi said that. But he really didn't. On the other hand, the Amalgamated Clothing Workers of America, a union, and one of their leaders, Nicholas Klein, in 1914 said, "In this story, you have a history of this entire movement. First they ignore you, then they ridicule you, and then they attack you and want to burn you. And then they build monuments to you. And that is what is going to happen to the Amalgamated Clothing Workers of America." Sadly, I'm not sure if the Amalgamated Clothing Workers of America even exist anymore. but there's, I kind of like the fact that that comes from an American labor leader instead of coming from Gandhi. Because, of course, whether we realize it or not, or whether we think about it or not, most people realize it if they give it some thought. Labor in this country is the mother and the mother church of progressive activism. And we would do well to remember that. And whether it be West Virginia, Kentucky, Arizona, Oklahoma, or Colorado, teachers are redefining the new labor movement and giving force to a segment of society that was thought to be largely moribund. If you were looking for another reason to respect teachers, well, here's one. You remember just a little bit ago we were talking about all them pissed off NRA members at what was going out and shooting their Yeti coolers and packing them with explosives and making them go boom into a million tiny pieces because the Yeti cooler company had the unmitigated gall to not want to do business with a bunch of bloodthirsty goddamn maniacs anymore. Enter the American Federation of Teachers. Across this country, there are 1.7 million members of the American Federation of Teachers. And the AFT decided it didn't want to do business with Wells Fargo anymore. Wonder why. Well, Wells Fargo has a banking relationship, an ongoing banking relationship, which they will not end with the National Rifle Association. The AFT went so far as to directly recommend to Wells Fargo that it stop lending money to the NRA. And that it imposed some level of restrictions on firearms manufacturers. This all came in the wake of the Valentine's Day massacre at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. But Wells Fargo said, fuck y'all, bunch of teachers. Bloomberg News has dubbed Wells Fargo the preferred financier for the U.S. gun industry. Wells Fargo has provided hundreds of millions of dollars in loans and bonds since 2012 for firearm ammunition companies and firearm companies themselves. And Wells Fargo, which, by the way, just got dinged with a $1 billion fine for its dodgy, shady practices in regard to car loans and mortgages, but I'm sure they never pulled any of that shit on the NRA because, you know, the NRA's got guns. Among other things, Wells Fargo provided a, get this, $28 million line of credit for the National Rifle Association. And they also operate the NRA's primary accounts. So as of this past week, the American Federation of Teachers and all of its 1.7 million members said that they would forego any further offering or promotion of the mortgage lending program that the bank maintains for AFT members. AFT also said they were going to pull its pull Wells Fargo off of its AFT member benefits site. AFT President Randy Weingarten wrote in the letter to Wells Fargo, despite our several attempts by phone and email to schedule a meeting to discuss your support for the NRA, your office's response has been radio silence. At the same time, we have read in the press that you will continue your relationship with the NRA. Since we wrote to you expressing our concerns, we've been attacked by the NRA and its communication arm, NRA TV, in the vilest ways. We can only assume that in light of your silence and the NRA attacks, you've decided that the NRA business is more valuable to you than students and their educators are. And apparently it means something. In an article at USA Today, they noted that 1,600 AFT member families had mortgages with Wells Fargo last year. More than 20,000 union members have mortgages with the bank. Meanwhile, how's the NRA responded? Well, they called the AFT commies. AFT sees the NRA as an obstacle to pushing a radical agenda, one where lazy progressives can sit all day in a classroom while students languish. Well, I'd rather they languish than get shot, but that's me. That was Grant Stinkfield, by the way. The AFT prefers a boot on the throat of those low-income kids to keep them down, to be dependent on government. I'll put this bluntly. Randy Weingarten and the AFT are one of the greatest threats to our children. Well, you know, no AFT members have ever marched into a classroom and shot the place up. Greg Stinkfield is decidedly overmatched in this case. Randy Weingarten responded saying, last time I looked, it was teachers shielding kids and taking money out of their pockets for supplies for kids. Stop bullying. And why are you so afraid of us asking Wells Fargo to make a choice? Children or guns? Meanwhile, other banks are responding. J.P. Morgan Chase said it would limit business dealings with gun manufacturers. Bank of America said a week or so ago that they would no longer make loans to companies that produce military-style rifles for civilian purchasers. And particularly Bank of America cited Parkland as the reason for doing what they did. So maybe there can be some support the NRA hashtag videos over there of them, I don't know, shooting apples for the teacher. Or, you know, maybe shooting textbooks. Or mannequins dressed up as teachers. Because that's the kind of threatening behavior that the goddamned NRA stands for. Right? Yeah. Oh, and by the way, sorry about the White Rose stream going down for a minute. It did, but as quick as I saw it, no idea why. Meanwhile, note coming in from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, weird. Weird how Malala Yousafzai was shot by the Taliban on her way to school and miraculously recovered and received the Nobel Prize. We have dozens of boys and girls weekly in our country, and we can't seem to pass any legislation to bring some sanity to the issue. No, we can't. And the gun humpers are crybaby snowflakes who can't even deal. Who can't even deal with the most simple efforts to keep, oh, say, guys who go into Waffle Houses with nothing but their overcoat and an assault rifle. Because freedom. So, there you have it. Let's run over and check in with Silent R. Lamar on the phones. At least the cat didn't re-engineer that. Hey, Lamar.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
It's a great day to be a West Virginian, even though spring's never going to get here.
Well, you know what? You still got the best area. I've been there once before with my son on a basketball tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You got beautiful country, and I hate that they're blowing the shit out your hills.
Well, not just here, but Kentucky, Virginia, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, every time you bring up an educational situation, you know I'm going to call in.
Well, you've certainly got the history and the experience to bring the expertise to the table.
Man, I'm looking. I got about 8 more years. I'm going to retire with about 45 years of teaching the public schools. All I have to say to the Colorado teachers, just walk away from your job. Walk away. And then you see such a flurry of how we're going to replace. How are we going to get people to teach our kids? What are they going to teach? Oh, man, sometimes you have to take their bluff and just really go with it. Because if every teacher in Colorado were to walk off their job, what do you think they would do?
It's hard to know.
Well, they figured that...
To be fair, it doesn't look like the legislation that these Republicans in Colorado have proposed is going to go anywhere.
That's not the point. The point is they put it on the table. Take them for their word. If they tell you they're going to shoot you, believe them. They're going to shoot you. So if they're going to threaten you, walk off your job. And I grant you, they will be so happy to negotiate with you because they can't replace you. See, people are professions. Teachers and all this, all the other people, we have a skill set. Not everybody can be a teacher, like everybody can't be a parent. Like the guy who let his son have the gun after he just proved that he was deranged in the head. Okay? You follow me?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody can have a baby. Everybody can make a kid. But there is a quality to being a parent. So, I mean, I look at it like this. I have kids that come. I mean, I deal with over 160 kids a day. Every day. And if we were to multiply that by 12, do you know how many lives I impact?
Oh, over the course of how many years?
35. I'm working on my, I'm going to do it. My mother went 60 years. I'm going to do 40. I don't want to top my mother. But I'm like this.
Your mom was a teacher too?
Yes, she was. Elementary.
How cool.
And that's where we,
that's something you and I have in common. My grandmother went 60.
Yeah, like I say. I mean, sometimes I look like your wife. Her birthday was yesterday.
Right.
My mother is Wednesday, the 25th.
Oh, nice. Happy birthday.
Yeah, and I'm going to take her out tomorrow.
I know it's not gentlemanly, but how many trips around the sun will your mother have made?
85.
Wow. That's beautiful.
The women in my family live to be 90 or plus. It's the men who can't get past 85. I want to break that record.
Yeah, that one you're willing to keep at.
Yeah. But see, I come from a long line of school teachers and nurses. And it's really funny. It's just like, it's really weird that they take us for granted. I watched my mother, when I graduated in 76, but all through my elementary school, teachers did not have to pay for nothing in education. Ronald Reagan came around, I started watching my mother spend her money to educate kids. I'm watching myself spend money to educate kids. Something wrong with that picture. Why should I come out of pocket to educate your child? Because I want your child to be a better American? Come on, something wrong with that. And then if I don't spend my money, I'm a bad teacher. I got a no-win situation, Mr. Bob.
I'd say, yeah. I mean...
And then they don't want to pay us. That's the best, the bad side. Oh, we'll give you your benefits, but we're going to take more money out of your check for your benefits. You know, if we
were... Well, that's like those Colorado teachers. They're going to get a 20% raise by 2020.
But by 2020, two-thirds of them will have left the school district because they cannot afford to light the cost of living.
Well, let me just throw something in here. At the urging of a number of members of the community, I was told that I simply had to get started watching Breaking Bad.
And, I don't watch that.
And I did. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it begins with him being a teacher, a high school
right.
chemistry teacher.
Correct.
In New Mexico, which has a notoriously abysmal educational system on a par with the abysmal educational system in West Virginia. New Mexico and West Virginia have a lot more in common than we know. For instance, both states... are two words in their name that people tend to forget the first word. You'd be surprised the number of people in the United States who think New Mexico is just Mexico, and who think West Virginia is just a region of Virginia. But that having been said, I was struck by the fact in the setup to Breaking Bad that Walter White is a well-regarded, knows his stuff, high school chemistry teacher, and he has to moonlight down at the car wash.
So, I'm like this. I don't moonlight. I am an avid architect. You know I'm an architect.
Absolutely.
And I teach AutoCAD drafting at my local high school where I work. I used to produce people who could replace me. But it's been the last 10 years, I haven't been able to do that because of the Republicans. And, just think about it. Look at the teachers who are now out of all of a sudden, the red state teachers are screaming. They used to say the East Coast and the West Coast teachers, those elites, are just complaining. No. It's now hitting in the middle now. They're hitting in the middle now because the teachers who work at take Arizona and New Mexico, they went along with W's attack on teachers. They went along with the attack with Trump. But they saw some love with Clinton and Obama. And they realized the Republican Party hates teachers. Why are we voting for these people? Let's get our rights. Let's be like California, let's be like New York. Because you know what's really funny? I'm going to tell you this. Up until 1990, Georgia, Alabama were the top schools for blacks and everybody else because they did not compromise. But then the religious Fruit Loops finally got to them because under Reagan, the evangelists got involved. And you need a separation of church and state. Because there's no, I've had conversations with other people who talk this craziness. I said, show me in the book where God tells me I need to punish somebody for not believing in his word. There's no page for it. He doesn't say it. He does not say it. Okay, two men want to get married. Two men want to get married. All God asks me to do is love them. He doesn't tell me to judge them. He doesn't tell me to write laws to stop them from doing what he does not please. There are his kids. He will deal with them when they get to heaven. What's so hard about that?
Let me ask that. No, I mean, I get that. I get it.
And, I mean, it's like, go ahead.
Well, what?
Ahead,
no, what? The, I mean, let's drill down a little bit, Lamar. What the hell's wrong with a country that doesn't understand that its educational system has to be top notch? If anything else it has is going to be top notch. Okay, there are not enough students going to the schools in the states with good educational systems to pick up the slack for all the kids going to schools in the states with shitty educational systems. And, you know, look, there's a certain amount of snobbery, if you will, in thinking that, well, you know, some parts of this country need intelligent students, but, you know, Alabama, Mississippi, West Virginia, Kentucky, Oklahoma, you know, screw them. All we need them to be able to do is do what they're told. You know, they need strong backs and weak minds.
Well, see, you know what? I agree with you on all of that, but I would like to rephrase it. It's not just that you have a group of Republicans, and yes, I'm attacking Republicans right now because they are the downfall of America. They want to go to a totalitarianism lifestyle, and all that's going to give you is early remnants of Germany and a couple other countries, Italy, where we took the people turned on the administration and hung them all over the area.
Well, let me throw something out for your consideration, just because you might find it intriguing. You know, there's my dear friend Dr. Bill O'Brien is an educator of long standing and of great mind, and he spends a lot of time.
I would like to meet him.
You can. I don't know if you're going to meet him, but you can certainly listen to him, and he loves interacting with people. And starting last Wednesday and continuing tomorrow and probably Wednesday of this week, he's talking about issues related to education. And among other things, I had a note from Terrace who said, anybody who cares about the future of this country needs to hear Dr. Bill's program from last Wednesday and then, you know, pick up again tomorrow. He wasn't on the air live today. He had to be somewhere. But I agree. I mean, go over to whiterosesociety.org.
I have seen Dr. Bill, and I have heard, listened to him. I like him. I'm just a younger, not fully developed version of your buddy.
Well, Dr. Bill, you know, you can sign up for his RSS feed. So every time there's a new,
I will.
Every time there's a new program, it'll pop up in your feed, and I guarantee you, you learn a ton from Dr. Bill.
Oh yeah, I learned a lot from him that time I listened the 3 days I listened to him. I like the dude. I like him. But I'm like this. See, it's like, okay, let me put it to you this way. America thinks it has problems. Yes, we have problems. It's not one big problem. It's a million little problems that make the big problem. And people don't look at it this way. I mean, when I graduated from high school in 76, Grambling, the South, Alabama, all those schools were top-notch for Negro children.
Oh, the HBCs, you know, Tuskegee, Grambling, Jackson State,
yes,
Howard, Spelman.
Yes, because they had the education to get you over the top, make you unique. The question is, they can't get people now from high school that can fill those vacancies. And it all starts in elementary school. Because, like, I mean, some people, they're teachers out there. They know about the WASP accreditation for a high school. Back in 92, this WASP individual came up to me. And he asked me, what was my opinion on the situation? And I told him, I said, I'm going to speak to you as an individual who has his own business. I'm not going to speak for the school, but I'm speaking for me as my own business. You're giving me inferior material. I'm going to give you an inferior product. Basically saying, I got a ninth grader in my classroom who's reading on a fourth grade level. What the hell am I supposed to do?
Yeah, and in what grade?
He's a ninth grader on my campus.
Yeah, and
it's 9 to 12,
and he's
reading on a fourth grade level. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah, you can't make up 5 years of ground in one school year.
Thank you.
And that point, but Lamar, that points to the fact that we need to be spending more money on education everywhere, but we need to understand the critical nature of basic literacy and math skills as they are learned in grades K, 1, 2, and 3. Because that's where the difference is made.
Yes, it is. Elementary school is the primary basic of where you're going to be in this society structure. Now, you were born in what, 63?
Yep.
Yeah, you're the same age as my sister. When you were coming up and I was coming up, they had the Evelyn speed reading course.
Oh, yeah, Evelyn Wood, yeah.
Speed reading. I didn't get this typing. I can't type it for shit. I'm a hunting peck brother, but I got good hand and eye coordination, so I can do 45 words per minute. But like I say, Evelyn Stevie, I have said kids, I mean, my students have watched me sit down and read through four or five of their papers. They see my fingers scanning. They're like, what are you doing? I said, I'm reading your paper. And then they ask me, okay, you read it. And then I start telling them everything about it. They're like, how the hell did you comprehend that? How can you read that fast? I had a student tell me, Mr. Bob, I laughed. I really had to chuckle because I really put him down because he wanted to stand up against the teacher. He said, Mr. So-and-so, Mr. Silent Alomar, what makes you superior? I said, you know what? What makes me superior to you is that it takes you 2 hours to do what I did in 40 damn minutes. When I went to school, we had 40 minutes of education. We didn't have time to BS. And I look at the kids and the structure now, they come up with all kind of rules to like, oh, they need more time to learn the more. No, you're going to have there are going to be bullshitters of the world, and you have to separate the bullshitters from the real people who want to work. You know, that's the same thing in any job. You got people who are going to goof off, and they don't want to be up. You don't want to hurt their feelings because they like to goof off, so you hold everybody back. That's what America is suffering from. And the Republican's beloved saint, Ronald Reagan, made the statement, America can only handle one thing at a time. This is why we only have one object and one subject on every news, because he said that. And then he said the American people are above manual labor. This is why we have such a high unemployment, because I'm in the school system. And I'm going to tell you right now, not everybody's going to be a school teacher, not everybody's going to be a lawyer, not everybody's going to be a doctor. Everybody needs a hands-on skill. If your kid cannot do the bookwork, maybe he's good with his hands. He could be the next extreme designer or builder. We need people to build shit in this country. They talk to me and they talk to a whole lot of other people. They're mad because the Mexicans are in construction. They're mad at the Mexicans for being in wrought iron work. They're mad at the Mexicans for everything in the world. But think about it, Billy Boob. You stop teaching those trades. So how are you going to compete with somebody who's been taught seventh grade?
Right, and you know, they made Reagan with the assault on labor, made those trades less attractive to go into, because, you know, things like right to work drive the wages through the floor.
Well, but see, that goes to another point of my argument of life. Cheap labor is going to kill any country who believes in cheap labor. If the government doesn't get involved, cheap labor is going to kill your country. Because right now we have major manufacturing companies running around the globe looking for cheap labor. Well, think about it. Let's do simple math, really, really basic elementary math. I'm going to break it down for every laborman can understand. If you're going to build something over there for 13 cents, then you're going to bring it over here and try to sell it for $5, and the majority of your population is unemployed, good luck with selling that shit. This is why the Civil War was awesomely fought, because of cheap labor. People who were using slaves to do their work were making milk bundles of money, but they were now horning in and pressuring people who are doing shit legitimate. And that's where your pushback came.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, China subsidized their people. Socialism. This is why they hate socialism. Socialism means that everybody pulls together to help one another. Oh, hell, that's wrong. You should die by your bootstraps. If you couldn't pull your bootstraps up, that's your fault. Well, you know what? If you're going to keep me from having my bootstraps tied up, why? How can that be my fault? And like I say, Mr. Bob, I was born in 58. I'm watching all the stuff that I grew up in 61 go through, from 61 to 65, watch it now. Negroes getting arrested for sitting in Starbucks. Woolwork. Think about Woolwork. We couldn't even sit at the goddamn counter without the police coming in bashing our heads. You know, people, America, they are not teaching you American history, because what you don't know, you are doomed to repeat.
And some people, it's not a matter of not knowing. They know and they want to repeat. Okay?
I mean, even if they want to repeat, okay, you want to repeat this? What was the end result of what they did? That's another thing that they're not being taught. All these Nazis, I mean, I don't have a problem with Nazism. Run your Nazism. I will show what happened to Hitler and his Nazism at the end of its run. Do they want to live that again? I can't grant you. These people, if they were educated, they would walk away from Nazism, because it does not work. Nazism, Christianity, Muslim religion, all religion, all Abrahamic religion require that we're all one child. We can fight amongst ourselves, but we're all one child. And that one child that gets out of control will be slain. It's written. You can see it.
Well, you just got some affirmation coming in from Todd in South Carolina.
I like Todd.
Yeah.
I like Todd and your cooking segments. I've gotten better at barbecue. I was, let me flip my potatoes, damn it. I'm out here grilling potatoes, man. Damn.
Sorry. You can't get lost in the conversation, man. Do not ruin dinner. I sent some food porn to Todd over the weekend. I was out I did up a bunch of ribs and some chicken wings.
Well, where's my email? Oh, I'm not that special. Oh, I feel so
abused. Quit that. He sends them to me and I send them to him. But anyway, Todd says, Silent R. Lamar is absolutely correct. That was my experience when I was teaching. You thought I was kidding when I said I couldn't afford to teach because it costs too much.
It does. But see, there's a difference. There are people who believe in teaching. There's people who shouldn't be in teaching. I am a true teacher. I am from a family teacher. I will spend my money. I will make every money because I want, the best thing I ever hear when kids come up to me after they graduated 5-6 years, Mr. Silent R. Lamar, the things you taught me and what it makes me a better person. You know what, Mr. Bob, the principal at my high school is my former student.
Oh, wow.
Now, how do you think I feel?
That's got to be special.
I did my goddamn job. I made a person who is much better. And when he comes to work, he looks forward to seeing me. And he comes to my classroom to preach and praise me because I made him a better human being. You can't get no more. Money can't buy that shit, Bob.
No.
The true teachers will tell you that is not. Their principle is for their kids who come through their door to be a successful American who contributes to the community. That is all we want. We don't ask for a whole lot, but give us some time, give us some love, and give us some praise. But the Republican people say, the hell with me.
Well, depending on where you're teaching, see, in a state like West Virginia, these godforsaken Republicans are more than willing to praise and say nice things, but you want some money? Oh no, we ain't got none of that. We gave it all to the frackers and the frackers and the coal companies.
Right, but see, that's where I made my statement. The teachers in West Virginia did a wonderful thing when they walked out. They crippled the state. They let them know that we are no longer going to take the penance that you want to give us. And you want us to make your children and my neighbors better individuals? Come on, cough it up, Mr. Bucks. Because, you know, if it was up to me, Bob, I would put it back to like it was in 1945. No, I would even go back to 1932, where Congress didn't have a pay scale. They were part-time employees where they would work 6 months out of the year and then they had to go back to a real goddamn job. The more people don't even know the history of the government. Senators and Congress people were part-time employees.
Oh, Franklin said Franklin said that when you left public service, it should be thought of as a promotion because then you would be back among the bosses. The people.
Yes, but you have the Paul Ryans of the world and people before him who say they're going to take what we give them or they can just die. We, the people, like it says in the Congress, in our Declaration of Independence and all this other good stuff, we, the people, which are the multitudes of Americans, we are the government. And when we forget that we are the government, we are doomed to the results.
Dr. Bill would say
the same thing.
We reap what we sow. Well, I hope you'll go and you'll download this past episode from Wednesday of Dr. Bill. And
I'll do that.
And try to catch tomorrow's program, too, because he's going to pick up where he left off. Silent R, it's awful good talking to you. You got some affirmation. Coming from Les. He said nothing but facts from Silent R.
Let me say this. As your angry architect friend and beloved brother, if you don't meet your goal come Friday, I may have to bail you out again.
Well, I hope it doesn't come to that because you've been an awful good friend
too,
of the program.
Me too. But you're good for, I'm not going to say, I'll email you the amount, but you're good for it.
All right. Thanks, Lamar. You have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Take it easy, my brother.
Thanks for everything you do for those youngins.
I try my best. You know, I got this uphill climb. I'm getting old. I hit 60 come November.
Whew. Well, I tell you what, if you're still dealing with ninth graders, you got fortitude that most of us can't even dream of. You take care of them.
Like I said, all I want is you to send me some recipe on that food porn network you got.
Todd just sent me a follow up. Your ribs are making everybody envious, Bob.
That's what I'm saying. You ain't say, man, you need to share some of your secrets with your friends.
I don't have any secrets.
You don't send me no recipe. I'll be sitting there. I feel like the mad scientist. Step one,
go buy yourself a char griller acorn smoker. That's step one.
Okay.
Step two is buy some ribs. Step three is use good charcoal. I absolutely love that grill. It's the best I've ever.
I've seen some acorns in my territory. And like Tracy, I don't know. I haven't heard from Tracy. Has she called in?
No, I was worrying about Tracy. I haven't heard from her in a while. I sent her a note over the weekend, just checking in. I haven't heard back.
Okay, I'm a little concerned because the Uber drivers are right here. I mean, it's getting stupid in L.A. I'm sorry, California is getting stupid. I feel for my girl.
Well, I'm hoping we'll hear from her. Because, you know, we are kind of a community family congregation.
You have a good one, you know, shoot me some recipes, man, because I like that white barbecue sauce you keep talking about.
Ooh, yeah, and that goes so good. That goes so good on wings.
Well, you know what? I can't do it unless you send me a recipe, dude.
I've given them out on air, Lamar, for everybody.
Well, no, I want an email because I don't listen like I should. I'd be listening to you in the car. I didn't even run over people.
Yeah.
Like when you were talking about Jesse Lee, I almost killed some people because I don't want to be scared, you know?
Wait a minute.
I'm like, damn, I wanted to go kill that. I mean, like, I didn't even know some people.
Yeah, not really, but, figuratively, know, but yeah.
Let's be real. No, you know, you got me, my brother. You are my brother.
All right.
Brother, you know?
I'll put you together the white barbecue sauce recipe. And if you ever go get your acorn, Lamar, I'll walk you through breaking it in and setting it up
okay.
And getting it going right and proper.
I might scare the shit out of you in the next 6 years. I might come visit your punk butt.
Well, I make it, but worse things have happened, okay? I mean,
I want to see the Horn Plantation.
The
complex.
The fabulous Horn Mansion. Trust me, you don't.
Yeah. I can imagine what it looks like, but you know what? I'm from Kilgore. I might have got roots in Kilgore, Texas. I got about 6 acres down there that I got to develop, so I know what your compound looks like.
Yeah, it's one acre with a fallen down house on it.
I told my great grandmother's house down because it was falling down, like you said. Like I said, I still love you when you talk hillbilly, man, because you got to keep me in touch. Okay.
All right, you take care, Lamar. We'll talk soon.
It sure will. Thank you, brother.
Bye now.
Bye.
That's the one and only Silent R. Lamar calling from Southern California. Quick update. Since Travis Reinking was taken into custody, he has since been arraigned. As I said, no word on which fast food they took him to, a fast food restaurant, or if. But this may be even better than getting taken to Burger King. This is astonishing. Now, this is a guy who is alleged to have murdered 4 people and harmed 4 others. He has been arraigned, and understand, there is a principle of American law that says you are entitled to a reasonable bond when charged with a crime. You're entitled to a reasonable bond. He's been, except in murder. Murder, you don't necessarily have to have bond, especially because the things that go into bond determinations are things like, flight risk, roots in the community, property ownership, stability, likelihood to reoffend. These are all things that a court's supposed to take into account. Well, Travis Reinking isn't even from Middle Tennessee. Travis Reinking's from somewhere in Illinois. Travis Reinking fled the scene, hid in the woods, tried to evade capture, was caught, you know, with another gun in his possession, potentially for the purpose of doing more harm. And I will be dipped, but he has been admitted to alleged to have murdered 4 people. And now bond hasn't been posted, but bond was actually set for him at $2 million. Not even $1 million per dead victim. $2 million. That's $500,000 for each brown person that he killed, allegedly. Is that breathtaking? Is that shocking? Because to me, it shocks the conscience. What do you do if some old sovereign citizen group out there comes up with the $2 million bond to put up and lets him out so that he can go and shoot up another Waffle House? That's astonishing. And no, a black guy similarly charged would not get the same treatment. Would not. Just wouldn't. I have thanks to send out. Thank you very kindly to Will in Chicago who got us started this evening. That took us down to 6:40 to go. And Steve from Georgistan put a $20 challenge on the table, hoping that somebody would match it so that would take us down to only 600 to go. So there's a $20 challenge on the table for anybody who wants to match it. And well, I really do. I cherish the week of fundraising free radio we get to do when we do get all our fundraising out of the way before the last 5 days of broadcasting of the month. And this is that day. Tomorrow should begin fundraising free broadcasting for the rest of the week and into Monday. But if we don't meet it, we won't do it. Well, there's Marty being an optimist. At least he wasn't released. At least, yeah. Okay, let's check in real quick with Scott. Hey, Scott.
And Punky.
And Punky.
And Chirps.
And Chirps, yes.
Let me rip out a little page from poor Scotty's almanac.
Yes.
This would be in the back with the helpful household hints.
Yes.
And other useful stuff. If a black shooter in Tennessee were similarly charged, well, first of all, your premise is all wrong. If there had been a black shooter,
he would not be alive.
He would not be alive to be charged. He would be, oh, what they call dead. So there's that. But anyway, I get Punky says amen. He's over my little amen corner. I'll only keep you a couple of seconds. Kudos to Lamar in terms of schools today not teaching history adequately or even properly. And two things that people out there in Radio Land could easily do to remedy some of that problem. On Netflix, there's a pretty good series called Oliver Stone's Untold History of the United States. It's like 10 or 12 episodes, and it gives you stuff that I guarantee you did not learn in school, unless you were in school a long, long time ago. And even then, you probably didn't learn it. And another one, you'll have to go to the library, because it has yet to be released in any public way for home viewing. In the early 90s, like 91 or so, PBS had a great five-hour series called Making Sense of the 60s. And I tell you, a lot of libraries have it on VHS. If you can unearth your old VHS deck, I guarantee that will give you some information and some context that, believe it or not, will help you zero in on why things are crazy today, because we're still fighting some of the battles. I mean, Trump is the answer, the response to a lot of those right-wing unwon battles of 50 years ago or more. So there's that. But that's not why I called. I missed almost the first full hour of the show today. So, but I'm glad that you did mention that you checked out Breaking Bad. And this past week, I did something that I do every couple of years. I revisit the entire series.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it wasn't watching Squidbillies. Okay.
No, still I'm having trouble with that link. I haven't tried it on Chrome browser yet, but I will. I promise. Rewatching of the entire list of episodes of Breaking Bad, I checked on an episode by episode basis on Wikipedia to kind of follow along that way, and also to see what the critics at the time had to say about the show. And of the 62 episodes in the series, I don't think there were more than one or two that critics rated with anything less than an 8 out of 10 or higher. And most of those were mid-8s. Up until low to mid 9s, and there were a couple of episodes that they rated 10 out of 10. So I'm telling you, if you will commit to watching the entirety of Breaking Bad, I promise you, Bob, you will be rewarded in ways that you can scarcely imagine. And I know it's a commitment, but I'm telling you, like I told you last week, it is exquisite television.
Well, I watched the first two episodes, and I'm gonna keep plugging at it. I had some bizarre dreams after that second episode for reasons that might be obvious, but
yeah. Well, I'm telling you, there is so much TV that doesn't come anywhere near to being well crafted. And Breaking Bad is the exception to that. I mean, and now I read online here that the sequel, Better Call Saul, has just been awarded a Peabody Award, which is no small thing. I mean, these people, Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould and all the actors and actresses and craftspeople and writers and directors, these people are doing good stuff, if you like quality entertainment. that'll make you think and ponder and look at your world in a different way. I'm telling you, you cannot go wrong with Breaking Bad, and for my money, Better Call Saul as well. So there's that. Let's see. I was going to mention something about food, and I've spaced whatever my point was about food. But I know what it was. A while back, I found an old episode of The Tomorrow Show with the late, great Tom Snyder that used to be on NBC. And I saw a segment with a guy who was known, I think, as the Chili King, from down in Texas somewhere. And I can't remember his name, but I got a link to the recipe for his chili, which apparently has won blue ribbons all across the planet. And I'll send that to you because...
Ooh, I love a good chili recipe.
Well, I'm telling you, if this guy is if it's as good as Tom Snyder and the crew were saying, and if it's a deserving of the awards that this guy has won, I think it's probably a damn fine bowl of chili. And he worked on it apparently for years, tinkered with it and stuff. But I'll find that link and send it to you, and you can tell me what you think.
Okay.
But anyway, I guess that's it, unless you've got something for me, a burning question.
It's not a matter of disinterest, but, well, I've already asked my question, and the answer is, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I've two browsers that I use on this laptop. One is Safari, which is like the native Apple Mac browser, and I added a Chrome browser a while back for other stuff, and there's some setting on the Safari that I've put into gear that's causing me trouble with this link that you sent for the Squid Bullies, but I'll try it maybe later tonight on Amazon Chrome.
Well,
see,
you know, if you didn't have the experience of being born and raised in Virginia, even though it was Northern Virginia and therefore civilized, I wouldn't suspect that you might get a kick out of Squidbillies. But my God!
Oh, I know a lot of country folk.
I mean, some of your. Some of your ancients back down Manassas way could probably very easily, and I mean no offense by this, because the same could be said of mine, could very easily find their way into a Squidbillies script.
Probably. Hell, some of my current contemporaries who I knew and grew up with back then could probably fit into a typical episode. Because there's a lot of turd hoppers and shit kickers in my family and background and extended folk.
I tell you what, I got a real thrill. I've never had a find quite like this. I actually, and who knew? This is just gonna tickle. The New England contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation is going to be thrilled to hear this. No, they're not. I found my New England roots, and it's a story that there's a detail there that has to be fleshed out, but I actually found the passenger manifest, and the name of the ship, and the year that it arrived, of one of my ancestors.
Really?
Yes. The ship, the Elizabeth and Anne. Had in the early years of the 17th century been engaged in slave trafficking, but then when the British government decided that it was going to start sending its ne'er-do-wells abroad, the owners of the ship thought that there was more money to be made doing convict transportation.
Mm-hmm.
And then they found the best gig of all. Religious maniacs who wanted to go to America and would pay for the privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found him. And it makes for a hell of a story.
Incidentally, religious maniacs booking passage for the New World, so-called, is detailed quite nicely in the early chapters of Kurt Anderson's book from last year, Fantasyland.
I have got to get serious about that book. That's one.
It's great. Everybody I know who's read it has just thanked me profusely for mentioning it and letting them know about it, because it's, anyway, go ahead. So who was the relative? What were the circumstances of them coming?
Well, he gets aboard the Elizabeth and Anne in London in May of 1635 and lands in the Massachusetts Bay Colony and takes up residence in Roxbury.
Hmm.
At exactly the time when there's a great big religious hullabaloo taking place that was led by another one of them troublemaking women's, a woman named Anne Hutchinson, who was challenging the patriarchal structure of Puritan religion at the time.
I'm pretty sure she is one of the characters in Kurt Anderson's book.
And she gets, she's got the antinomian, it's called the Antinomian controversy, and it shook that colony to its core. And my ancestor, at the tender age of 17, walked smack dab into the middle of it.
Mm. Well, you know why it shook up the authorities.
Well, yeah, because a woman was saying that she had direct access to divine inspiration. And the last time a woman got uppity like that, her name was Joan, and they burned her at the stake for it.
Yeah, it was a woman calling men and the power structure on their obvious bullshit.
Yeah, and so she winds up getting exiled and is murdered by the natives in the Bronx. Of all places. He married and lived out his life there, and his grandson then shows up, of all places, in Virginia, in the Tidewater country.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a tobacco planter. And it's by the end of that same century. And it just fascinates me to no end. But
I've got to get you hooked up with my niece, who lives down in Texas somewhere. She's actually taken classes and has a certification in genealogy. And she's got our entire genealogy for the various sides of my family. And she's doing this apparently as a sideline. I'll have to get you hooked up with her, because she, if there are people to be rooted out in the tree, she'll find them.
And he came, and he was born either in Lancashire or Southampton, and that's where the trail goes cold.
Hmm.
But I thought it was pretty bizarre that in, 1690 or 1695 or whatever, because there's a record in the church there in Virginia of him taking a pound of tobacco to the church as an offering for the delivery of a healthy baby boy.
Yeah, churches back then even were scamming the folks.
You goddamn right they were.
And
that's why they're churches. But the other side of that is that there's a record there.
Yeah, that I was just going to say, there was one good thing about churches. If you can say just one good thing about them, it's that they kept decent records, baptismal, marriage, and burial.
And apparently you had to get some sort, and I need to look into this some more. One of the reasons we know that this guy wasn't a convict, this 17-year-old, unskilled, 17 years old, but apparently is a member of a congregation that wants to get the hell out.
Mm-hmm.
But they all had to swear an oath of affirmation of sovereignty and be certified by the parish minister or whatever before they could leave England.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's just And it was an 8 to 10 week voyage on a shitty little tub that probably didn't have more than 100 people on it.
Can you imagine that?
Understand, the Mayflower was a monster, comparatively speaking, at 180 tons. Most of the ships, and my God, the great migration of white Protestant English to the North American mainland, the list of the ships they were just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. It was like a transit. Well, it wasn't like one. It was one. It was a transatlantic invasion.
Yeah, but on the matter of the boats, Bob, they were essentially the Greyhound and the Trailways of their era. And even in today's world, you've got cruise ships. Stories will pop up in the media on a fairly regular basis of nightmares and horror stories.
Oh, yeah.
Of modern-day, well-equipped, professionally designed cruise ships where all manner of hell and disease break out, okay? Or there was one a couple of years ago that was stuck down in the Gulf of Mexico, and the engine had burned out or something. And they were stranded literally at sea for the better part of a week. You know, and people getting sick. Oh, God. Now, imagine, take yourself back to the mid-1600s, late 1600s, and imagine, what did you say, an 8 or 10 week voyage?
Yeah.
No certainty at all in terms of when you depart that you're actually going to get where you're going. I mean, if they drained the Atlantic, I imagine the wooden hulls wouldn't have lasted, but can you imagine the undersea landscape of ships that didn't make
it? Well, no, that's the thing. And maybe it speaks to British seamanship, but they were remarkably disaster-free.
Really?
They were very good at it. There were a couple of noteworthy disasters, but for the most part, it was get on the boat and 8 weeks later, after you've lost 50 pounds by throwing up everything but your toenails, new world!
Jeez.
I love these little moments that come out as a result of these things. I just got a note from Lee in New York saying, Ann Hutchinson is the source of the name for a highway in my area, and Lee's in the New York City area, Hutchinson River Parkway.
Yeah.
I'll be darned.
I've heard of that road.
And Charlene just wrote in from Rhode Island to say, I had four bears settled in Roxbury in the 1630s also. Cousin. Yeah. but Roxbury's just a part of Boston now.
Yeah.
But it was
a neighborhood.
But it was its own independent community, and it was a juggernaut too. And we tend to think of those early Puritans as being dour and humorless. Well, it's spelled Roxbury now. Well, when they founded it, it was Rocksbury because the ground was so goddamn stony you couldn't work it. It was nothing but buried rocks.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's that. But no, it's I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know why the grandson. I don't know how the grandson Abraham winds up in Virginia. Maybe he decided, you know, Congregationalism and Puritanism wasn't for him, and went down somewhere that there was a chance to, be a good old fashioned. What do they call them? There's a nickname for Anglicans and Episcopalians.
C of E.
No, but the something something, and it rhymes and it's funny. I can't remember, but and then I mean, and once I get to the guy in Virginia, I can trace him all the way I can trace him all the way to me. With a few stops along the way in places like Carroll County, Virginia, where in one census my ancestor was the only resident of the Carroll County Jail.
Oh, really?
Yes. We've all got
any word on how he wound up there?
No, but he winds up divorced shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
And moves here. He and his brother together, and his brother goes on to become a member of the legislature, a senator, the sheriff for eons in a county, and my ancestor just settles down to farming and leads a long and quiet life as a farmer.
Well,
and a banjo player.
A banjo player, there you go.
And a Bible reader.
I know we're right at the top of the hour, but I would be remiss if I didn't mention this quickly. On my mother's side of the family, it's pretty white bread, okay? I mean, in Alexandria, I'm like fifth or sixth generation back when I was born there 60-some years ago. So my mother's side of the family is all pretty white bread, and we actually do go back to someone who did come over on the Mayflower. So there's that. Meanwhile, my dad's side of the family all came from Eastern Europe.
I was going to say, that would be the crazy Russians, right?
Well, no, not exactly Russians. Bulgarians would be, because that's the tricky part about that region. The names change and the maps change from not decade to decade, but century to century. Okay. I mean, even in our lifetime, what used to be Czechoslovakia is now the Czech Republic. Where's that place? Yugoslavia has gone through more than a few changes.
Serbia, Croatia, Slovenia.
Yeah, but it's been in the last 10 or 12 years that we've discovered relatives back there that my niece has hooked up with through these genealogy searches and stuff. And it pisses me off because my grandmother and grandfather on my dad's side came over from the old country in the 19 teens. Okay. So every time I hear Trump and his minions talking about this made up shit about immigrants, it just pisses me off all over again, because some of my people came over from somewhere else and they were given an opportunity. That's all that people want in life, is a damn chance, you know? No guarantees necessarily, just the opportunity to make good. And if you allow them that space and that opportunity and this freedom that they're real big on beating the drum about, you will see the benefits and the results, you know? And it just pisses me off all over again when they make up this shit. It's like...
No, it's garbage. And look, let's make no mistake. When your Eastern European ancestors arrived, they were probably some brand of Orthodox. And it's not like the mainline Protestants were, well, hail fellow well met. Come on over here and bring the incense censer with you, too. Yeah, marry my daughter. Sure, why not?
Oh, no, there was nothing remotely approaching a welcome mat. If anything, it was the exact opposite.
Well, get the fuck out. And what are you doing here?
And the house that my dad grew up in, I'm sure it's not there anymore. Anybody who knows Alexandria, who knows where George Washington High School is on Mount Vernon Avenue, it was more or less directly across the street from George Washington High School.
Wow.
And it was a horror. It was a clapboard house with a wooden porch. And in the 60s, when I recall being told that's where my dad grew up, along with four brothers, and a mama and a papa, We couldn't imagine it. We couldn't imagine it. Because you got to figure, he was born in 1923.
Well, okay. You want to talk about a horror? Mm-hmm. I'm not comparing. We're not competing here. But anybody who goes to my Facebook page will see as my cover photo a very faded, grainy photograph of a cabin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the cabin where my ancestor, my great-grandfather, raised his humongous family that ran long to daughters. And by the time they were done, those four, maybe five daughters had something approaching 300 cumulative years of teaching experience.
Mm-hmm. And what does that tell you, boys and girls?
And I have his Bible, and I have his cut glass goblet from which every night when he came in from the fields, he would drink one glass of warm sugar water.
Hmm.
Play his banjo, read the Bible to the children, and send them off to bed. And I was actually in that house when I was a kid because it was still standing until two or three years ago when I drove out the road and went, what the fuck? Because his house had been torn down. And all that remains are the walls that he laid by hand to hold the hillside up and a few of his apple trees that used to provide the apples that he would keep sitting on the shelf there by his rocking chair that he would peel every night and pass out to the children as treats.
It's lovely that you've got some of those heirlooms, especially that cut glass goblet.
To be charitable, that house stank. It stank of generations of not frequently washed human.
Mm-hmm.
And it stank of coal, and it stank of fuel oil. And I remember that country, you saw it all over the place, particularly in the country, a linoleum or some sort of floor covering with a cabbage rose design in it.
Mm.
And it's fixed in memory.
And you got to figure that it may have been aromatic from numerous sources and in numerous ways.
Oh.
But it didn't stink of desperation.
No, it stank of life.
Yeah. Because I'm sure.
And it wasn't because they were dirty people. It was because bathing frequently was an undertaking that would take hours.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, and refresh the hot water and you know, and who gets the clean water and who gets the dirty? Because everybody bathes in the same.
Yeah, and if you're the last kid in the family to hit that bath water, if you can call it that, you know.
The other remarkable thing about this is he may not have had a tremendous degree of education, but he knew better than to sell his mineral rights. And those mm-hmm. mineral rights still go with that land to this day. And there's been mining all around it, but they haven't touched that land because they can't.
Getting back to New England, there's a word that describes people of New England, New Hampshire, Maine, Vermont, places like that, and I think it's applicable to the people of your ancestors.
Hard Scrabble?
No, Flinty.
Flinty.
Flinty?
Hard Scrabble definitely counts.
Yeah, but by Flinty, I've always taken that to mean like the little flint in your Zippo lighter that when you turn the little ignition wheel, a spark happens and fire comes out of that thing.
Yeah.
Flinty, hard, resilient, determined, you know.
And occasionally combustible.
Exactly. There you go. Bingo.
Yep.
Bingo.
Well, Scott, I got to get out of here. It's been a delightful conversation, but And thanks for and you and I have a talent for examining the obscure.
Well, I want you to keep us informed about your genealogical travels and discoveries, because it gives me a better insight regarding you. Because really, and I know what you need to go, but genetically speaking, you and I both carry some of those forebears. You know?
Oh, yeah.
And that's magic to me. You know, you talk about living eternally in the next world. Never mind that. There are people who are part of my makeup that I've never even heard of that have some impact on who and how I am, strangely enough. And you too, and everybody else out there.
Sure, exactly, exactly.
Anyway, go grill something, or
it's a little late for that, but I don't want to burn myself out on ribs, so I've decided that next weekend it's pork butts.
Well, I'll send you the chili recipe, and you can see what the Chili King had going for him. I think he passed on, but I'll send it all to you.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Scott.
See ya.
All right, bye now. That's weird. Sometimes Skype just drops out. Silent R. Lamar says, tell Scott thank you, please. Well, I think you just did, Lamar. And so we're out of here. Thank you to Steve and to Will in Chicago. Thank you to Will for jumping in, and thank you to Steve for the challenge. Steve went ahead and fulfilled the challenge, even though there was no response. So tomorrow, the fundraising goal will remain at $620. $620 to go, and if we can just finish it off, we'll have fundraising free radio for the rest of the week, the rest of the month. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff in the chat room. Thanks to Sparky and Steve from Georgia Stan, fresh back from vacation, all tanned, rested, and ready. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Remember, I'll be filling in for Malloy come Thursday of this week. And that means a two-hour program on Thorn in the Side Thursday. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.